Hello and welcome to another episode of Shh, Don't Tell My Mom. My name is Alexander Scatino. I am the host and the sole proprietor of the islandoftaboo.com. Check out all of the work there. Today we are joined with Madam Posh and Lady Bad Sushi, and they are kink content creators. Ladies, could you tell us more about that?
Oh goodness, where should we start?
We got a lot going on.
Yeah.
We'll just start from the beginning. So I am a femdom and a rigger. I practice the art of rope bondage. I have been kinky for probably about 5 years. I got active in the community almost about 3 years ago. excuse me. And from the beginning of getting active in the community in my what we call vanilla life, but before getting active in the kink community in a public space, I've had a lot of experience in event planning and corporate event production. And so I very much saw that from the beginning as something that I was interested in getting into in the long run. And then it just happened to happen faster than I thought it was going to be. I met really amazing people. My business partner, both my business partners, one who is more silent, I met in the community, and they both were supportive of some of my overall ideas and concepts of things that I think that the community needed, kind of filling some of the holes. Representation for BIPOC folk being one of them, as a Black female, and as well as some more spaces that have a little bit more of the customer service and an event production side that is not necessarily taught. It's not the organization part. It's not the keeping track of everything. It's the little tiny things that you tweak and change, planning the playlist out for the 4 hours of the event so that the playlist sets the mood of, all right, everyone's coming in, and now everyone's, all right, we want them to start playing right about now, and then we want about 30 minutes people to start winding down, even subconsciously without them knowing it. And those are kind of things that I wanted to bring to some of the spaces I created. And then obviously I met this, my business partner, Lady Bad Sushi. Sushi, and she's not going to be in the flesh, but someday. And she felt similar. We have similar goals and ideas for things we want to do for and in the community. And so then we started working together.
Yeah.
I'll pass it off for you to add what you'd like there. If you want to add your own.
Yeah. So I kind of always. Oh, sorry. I'm Lady Bad Sushi.
Oh, I'm sure they couldn't tell with the voice change or anything.
You know, they can't see my face. I always knew that I was kinky. I knew that I needed to find my kinky dom. I needed someone to help me explore this kinky space. Never could find one. Always found the wannabe dudes that were like, but I could be your dom. And then I was pretty much like, no, you're not. No, you're not. You can't even fold your laundry or do your dishes. It's sad. So anyway, I found out through this entire kinky journey within the last year and a half that I'm a switch, a top-leaning switch, that I really love event organizing. I really love education and supporting my community and making sure that everything that the community has to offer is available for other people because I'm a community person. I think that all of these things are beautiful. I love the human experience, and I think that that should be shared, and I love the knowledge that everybody has, because kink and BDSM as a lifestyle is all about learning and sharing skills and sharing experiences and being connected by these things that make us feel different but can bring us all closer. And so with Madam Posh, I have been able to push myself into these new roles and work as, we help run so many different things, but I'll just put like some of my favorites. I helped establish the Kink Hub. It's something that helps promote education in the community. internationally now. It's really grown in the past couple of months. We also have a nonprofit called KSF.org or KSF.org, and it's Kinky Activist Support Fund. It helps marginalized communities and kinksters so that they can do the things that they love and also support mental health issues and also supporting Black-owned businesses. We also are trying to run a couple of conventions and events so that people can be represented in the spaces that they want to enjoy. We love diversity, we love differences, and we think that that should be embraced. We love kink. That's us.
Yeah, I think one thing that both me and Sushi have connected with is that kink brought so much to our life in such a short amount of time. And, you know,
it's like a night and day difference between us being in the vanilla world and then entering and then embracing this kind of kinky lifestyle community. Once we broke that seal, there was no going back. I remember my first, you know, rope scene that somebody like had me do in a dungeon, and he untied me and I was like, oh darn, I'm not leaving now. It was a totally like life-changing moment for me. I was like, this is where I'm supposed to be. And so now I just want to give, we both want to give all of this, you know, positivity and energy back to all of the people and get more people to come in and join us and experience the things that we love.
Yeah, I mean, I definitely also in my local community just started like, you know, doing the numbers. We're putting events together and, you know, we're getting, you know, 20 to 30 people at an event. And I'm like, but I live in a city of like 9 million. And just statistically, 2 million of them have to be at least curious about kink or, you know, some aspect of alternative lifestyle that we're into. And then also noticing a lot of crossover and a lot of other lifestyles as far as like, you know, I'm a genuine nerd. I go to comic cons and stuff like that. There's a lot of crossover with the cosplay, kind of nerd, community. And seeing that as well, I'm like, oh, well, people need to know about this and it needs to not be, I don't want to say it's difficult because I don't want to say it was difficult, but it did take time for me to find information and resources and connections and positive spaces and good groups to really explore, and learn. And it's such a, like, I definitely am connected to kink in an aspect of it being a lifestyle because I'm talking to new people who are coming into kink, I'm constantly reminding them to kind of erase the social and societal and gender and everything that you kind of learned in regular society. We're gonna reprogram. I hate to say reprogram because then it makes it really sound like a cult, but like, but in a positive way where. You know, I have a YouTube channel called The MP Experience, and I talk about, I vlog about my lifestyle as well as just like lots of educational videos and then also some fun entertainment videos. But I really try to emphasize on there that like, whether you're kinky or not, meaning whether you ever want to get whipped or in rope bondage or swing a paddle, there's so many aspects of and philosophies that we practice within the kink community that are just so healthy and positive and rewarding and healing and therapeutic.
And that you can bring into your vanilla life even. I've learned lessons that have helped me in my vanilla life and like, that should be embraced too. And people shouldn't be afraid just because there's a BDSM label on it.
Yeah. Like, when I was first getting into kink and I still had more vanilla friends, to be honest. I definitely had lots of people again that just thought I was like going to have orgies every weekend. And I know
before, questions I got.
Yeah. Before we got on this, you know, when we were talking to you, before we got onto this podcast, we had both mentioned that we're kind of on the asexual spectrum. And so, you know, that perspective, I'm definitely working on trying to change that of like what vanilla world thinks kink is. And that it's all kind of centered around sex because it's really centered around communication and trust and accountability and consent. It's really based around a lot of these foundations and philosophies and behavior characteristics in vanilla world that we don't really practice. Now, I'm not saying that we practice them well all the time. No. We're humans, right? Like, we fail, we learn, we make mistakes. But, you know, the core, again, philosophy of the aspect of the kink community is definitely founded around those things. And as well as like your kink relationships and your dynamics. I do lots of different education. I've done lots of videos on different educational topics in kink, and only probably about 30 to 40% of them are actually talking about how to like physically, tactically use something for a scene. You know, 60 to 70% of the content is explaining to you about, I cannot mention enough, communication, negotiations, how to be open and clear in your communication, defining terms in your communication, what consent looks like. You know, I tell dominants that, like, again, you can practice using your whip till you have the most perfect form ever, and that is great. You will use that like 10% in your relationship. Like 60 to 70% of your relationship is going to be psychological, mental, and emotional work with your partner, and making and reminding them that they are an amazing whole human being every single day. That's like the most simplest way that I can put it, where when I first had a few friends that I was in dynamics with, I realized very quickly, as my friend was pouring her heart out to me about something that happened at work the day, and I was just holding her and being like, but you're a strong woman. And I was like, oh, this is what this is. This is what this is. Like, I've been doing this my whole life. Like, this is, I'm life coaching or, you know, mentoring someone and providing them with again, I like to say it as like, you know, someone who's a level 8 can always teach a level 5. You know what I'm saying? You don't have to be at level, you know, 100 to be able to educate other people. And so if you're a little farther in your life journey, then, you know, help the other people get to the same place, and then you guys can help each other get farther.
Yeah, we're very into the holistic view of the person and the human. So that's why we're so into education and, you know, we've made several groups together, and we're just trying to reach out to people and make sure that they have a really good human experience.
We're very big on creating a good experience for other people. Something that helps us be able to work together too is that we are both the same personality type, which normally would not work, but for our personality type, we have similar goals, so it actually works very, very well. We've both said that, like, wow, I've never worked with someone in a team on a capacity like this that was just as efficient as I am. Like, where I'm like, did you do this, this, and this? And she's like, yeah, and I did this extra thing. And I'm like, that's what I would have done. And so that really helps. That really helps us be able to work together. That works for our personality type, again, because we have the same goals. If we didn't, it may not work as fluidly together. But that in itself is its own friendship, dynamic, partnership that we have to, you know, constantly be negotiating and communicating about to keep healthy, because we are kind of working together to create these spaces. We're not working on something like a cell phone or just a product. You know what I'm saying? What we're selling or the product we have is your own
connection,
intimate connection, life experiences with someone else. And I think that you should take extra care and be considering that when you're creating spaces for people. You're creating a space where people are going to be their most intimate and vulnerable in front of other people. If you're talking about a dungeon or again, when we're able to meet in large groups again.
We miss it.
Yeah.
So much.
That kind of space, like, you need to remember that people are not only taking time, but spending their money to go there to share a very intimate headspace, emotionally, physically, psychologically, whatever else. And you're creating that space for that. And to us, that's really, really important that that space is safe and you're comfortable in that. And kind of cherish kind of creating that space and people walking out going, oh my gosh, that was just, and then the music played just perfectly. And then they had another room for aftercare and it was so nice. And it's, those are the things that make people want to come back to spaces that you create.
Yeah. That's what makes us really like the content creation part, just creating for people, creating to connect with people.
And to better their life. I mean, I also do pro-dom work, and people ask me like how I got into doing pro-dom work. And it really had to do with the aspect of all the different aspects of being a dominatrix of one, getting to like set my own hours, make my own terms. Who do I have to ask to like finalize this decision? No one, it's me. So like that was great. And then I'm very much into like cosplay and burlesque and stuff like that. And when you're doing scenes, that's what it is. You get to play a role, right? And then I also, again, want to help empower people and help people's life be more fulfilled. And that's how I saw my sessions. I saw them, you know, I know that the US classifies it as sex work, but to be honest, I look at it as alternative therapeutic work, or stress relief, or like getting a deep tissue massage, because the, my clients were coming in to get an escape from from the reality of the everyday, or stress relief, or just, you know, a few hours of not having to make all of the decisions all of the time. And again, I like being that person, that kind of like safety or that relief that people need, providing that for them. And so like that's a whole other aspect too. That's really been, that's been very beneficial and rewarding. Like when I do the sessions, even though I'm not connected with them at a personal level and it is a little bit more transactional, like I'm not just there for the money. I'm like, this person is leaving with something that has bettered their life. Or help them understand themselves better. And I find that really fulfilling.
Yeah. Ditto.
So that's a really, really quick, really quick. Yeah, that is a really quick overview of a lot of the things that we do.
We tried. We still didn't even get to everything, but that's
yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
It's outstanding that you've been in this community for such a short time. It seems like 5 years into 3 years taking it seriously, and could develop so many different opportunities in this niched group where you were saying there's 20 people coming and there's millions of people in my city. It does sometimes seem like you're there and you are the minority. You're this like minority, and having that vision where it's like, there's no way that we're this minoritized. There's too many people out there consuming the content and that are willing to be open enough to experience these things. And
it's not even that, because when I talk, like, so I'm a teacher. That's why you don't see me. Hi. So I know that there's more kinky people, because when I end up telling other teachers what I do, they're like, oh yeah, me too. And so there's this really horrible stereotype where people are not allowed to accept themselves, even though everybody's doing it. Mm-hmm. And so that's also another mission that we have, is to just make a lot of this stuff more accessible and like accepted, so that people can feel open enough to do it. And then hopefully we can get to a place as a society so we don't have to shame people for wanting to experience with different sensations or connections with people.
Yeah, I have said often that like I would love a goal for some of the things that I've been working on where we impact society in a way where if you're leaving the office for the weekend and people are like, what are you doing this weekend? You can be like, I'm going to a rope launch convention. And they'll be like, sweet, I'm going to watch my kids play soccer. And you're like, all right, see you next weekend. And like, it's just normal. No one's like, what? A rope bondage? Are you gonna have an orgy? Da, 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 da. It's like, no. Because even though people in vanilla society may not be active in the community in that way, maybe that you like to do your stuff private. That's a valid space. But because they have an understanding of what it is, they're not all immediately assuming that we're all like just crazed sex heathens, right? And so then you can create this situation where people can come and talk about it more normally in other situations, and they don't have to hide. They don't have to worry about losing their job or worry that, you know, a family member is gonna shame them in front of everyone. They can just be like, that's a thing I do. And they're like, yeah, it's like a hobby, you know, like Susan plays golf and, you know, Betty likes to get tied up. That's what their hobbies are, right? And I think kind of creating that kind of normalcy will open the doors to us being able to talk about aspects of kink and BDSM that can get more into, again, the therapeutic realm, where we can't finance studies on this stuff to prove that this stuff is therapeutic until people understand it enough to want to sponsor those studies with money, right? Until we have people in mental health that are, which we have way more than you realize, and that are therapists and counselors that are also kinky, but making that connection of being like, hey, I understand that that's like separate, but like you also have skills that we could use where if you are willing to come out that you are open to taking clients who are kinky and make that connection, you could really, really, really help people because that's a niche market. If you're going to a therapist about an abusive relationship, right? You need someone who understands kink. If that abusive relationship now has a DS dominant submissive power exchange dynamic in it, someone who is vanilla in the mental health services is not going to understand that aspect and is going to not cause you to get the best therapy or most authentic representation of the situation.
I mean, even in the medical field, you show up with bruises and then you get a lot of questions. So if you have a kinky doctor, you can just be like, hey, I have bruises. It's consensual. I did a scene
the other weekend, whatever else. And then again, he also can give you care as a doctor, understanding that and being like, oh, great. You know, these bruises are healing properly. So then, you know, it can also be helpful in your kink dynamic where maybe if you did, maybe you did go really hard and maybe you caused some damage, but you're not aware of it. If you're able to communicate that with your doctor without being scared that he's going to have your boyfriend arrested or your partner arrested, then you can also get better medical health and or medical care. And I think that's important, again, in mental health and in physical medical care. As much as we talk about in the community being open and honest with your doctors, I still know a high percentage of people who aren't when they're talking about the type of play they do with their medical doctor. And that is really important because we are doing, depending on what you're doing a lot of physical activity. I recently actually, my partner broke his collarbone a few months ago. We do a lot of rope suspension, a lot of rope bondage. And the surgeon after doing the aftercare after surgery. And I asked him straight out, cause I was like, we're like, okay, so when can you get back to like strenuous activity? And he's like, oh, and I'm like, no, I'm gonna be specific about this. So we do bondage type things. When can he hang from the ceiling? That's what we're like, I need to understand that, right? Because it's one thing, like he had surgery, had a plate in his shoulder. You may think strenuous activity is picking something up that's 50 pounds or more, but it's not the same as me like suspending him from a harness that's going across his chest. Yeah. And so as I'm a sadist, so I actually enjoy those moments where I get to make some people a little uncomfortable. And the doctor laughed it off, but it's a legitimate question I needed to ask to know so that we can play safely. And that's my job as a dominant. So, yeah. I think again too, that kind of conscious way of living is an aspect in kink and kink community and philosophy that is incredibly beneficial that I think a lot of people would
they're missing out on it.
It is missing out. Where it's like you can choose to live your life in the matrix if you want, or you can take the pill, right? And you can still exist and participate in the aspect of the matrix, but you know the game instead of being ignorant, right? You understand what's going on, and then you can share space with people who share those same value systems, which only strengthens yourself more when you have to go out into the vanilla world where people don't share those same value systems.
Yeah.
Nice. Yeah. Thank you for that knowledge. I feel like I'm learning a lot and I get to sit back and listen to some masters on the other side of the country right now, or in the middle, or wherever we are in relative
to each other. Don't give us that title yet.
Oh no.
Please, I want you to be I want to have the specialists on my show.
We still have a lot to learn too.
And don't we all have a lot to learn? I would say I don't think that people that are walking down that road from advanced to master is someone to like marginalize yourself in your that you do have a lot. You have a lot more than you might think of knowledge. Even if you have a high ideal of yourself, I feel like there's a I always want to make myself feel like I don't know that much, even though I know a lot. And I would hate that to come out on the chart.
That's the plight of someone that is knowledgeable. People that end up knowing a lot feel like idiots.
Well, the thing is because the more you, right, like there's a reason why they say ignorance is bliss, right? The more you know, the more you realize that you don't know, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And so that's kind of what,
Reflects where we are.
Yeah. But I also think, I mean, there is something to be said for the fact that like when I came into the community, I got teased a little bit by other people within the community because as they started seeing me come to groups and classes, they were like, oh, that's the Black Dom. She always comes with a notebook. She's just always comes in and front row and is like, mm-hmm. And how did you do that again? Uh-huh. And just like taking notes. And it was like, I very quickly actually got the reputation for like, oh, if there's an educational class, like she's going to be there with questions and taking notes.
Also, if you're one of those people, feel empowered. You are fully present in that space. And do not feel ashamed for it.
And you're kind of, again, you're showing, it's also something I think people need to look out for in a partner. If you see someone coming to the dungeon and they're not just immediately trying to figure out who can I play with, who am I attracted to? They're like, no, I'm here because I like want to learn how to do this spanking correctly because I don't want to hurt anyone. That's someone that you need to pay attention to of like, they've got some good value sets, right? Yeah, it is. It really is. It really is. I have started making it a running joke that like my biggest fetish is communication. If you can communicate really, really well, I'm like, because it is kind of really well, like rare when, you have people that without spending a decent amount of time with and kind of understanding and learning their language, because we kind of all
see them shine.
Yeah. And you just kind of, because again, that's what connection is, right? Whether like at the end of the day, connection is communication, right? I may not say one word, but 70% of communication is not the words that come out of your mouth anyways. That's a whole big class. But what we're doing when we're kinky is a way of communicating with our partner. When I'm putting rope on my partner, my rope is communicating. It's communicating what I want you to do. When I push you this a little bit this way, it's communicating that I'm in charge. When I'm tying this or putting your, that is what connection is. It's a constant flow of I'm giving you energy, you're giving me energy back. I'm giving you energy, you're giving me energy back.
Reciprocity is very important to both of our types of play. Both of us really like energy play. We really like the give and take of an energy and inside a space that we're in. That's probably why we get along, because we just like revel in that.
But that's the thing is that that's what everyone's doing. We're just conscious of it.
Oh yeah.
Right? And I don't want to get like, I don't want to get super weird, but I'm into a little bit of spirituality, and I do, there's aspects of my spirituality that is definitely in my play. But if I'm in a zone of my play, and this again gets into kind of the, I'm going to forget the technical smart word, but basically how the chemicals in your brain are reacting to the play that's giving you what we call like top space or it's not just endorphins, but
I know there's more to it.
But when you're in the zone like that, you can kind of like people around you kind of fade out sometimes.
Oh, that's like,
and you're like in
tunnel vision. That's the, it's,
you're in hyper focus. You're in a flow.
There's an actual scientific psychology word for it. That's the one.
Yeah.
Yes.
You're in a flow.
That's the one.
Flow state. Yeah. Yeah, yeah, I work with a lot of like flow performers, so.
Yeah, super good stuff. There's, yeah.
But really what that is to me, like, I've been in scenes where like, I can visually see that energy leaving me, going to them, being transformed, coming back, feel it. Oh, that's good. Let me give you more. What are you going to do with this when I give you this energy? Oh, wow. This is how you gave it back. That was cool. This one was purple. What do you do with this? Like that's kind of how I visually represent like what a scene is. If you're taking away, again, what we're actually seeing, like psychologically, mentally, that's kind of what's going on.
Are you actually having open eye visuals?
I have before.
Mm-hmm. Ooh, yeah, super
intense. That's what makes our play kind of fun. Because it's just, we're both kind of in that. And she also plays that way with her partner, Bound Mystic. And it's really beautiful to watch just how they are so heavily connected with each other and just in the entire space. I've been able to film them a couple times and it's just very beautiful. You can check it out on her website.
Yeah, it's something I didn't really like, you know, mine and his connection was very much there from the first time we played, but it's something I didn't really have context or like verbiage for until probably in the last like 6 months of kind of explaining what that space is that we get into. Cause I definitely knew like I was getting into a top space because people would come and talk to me after the scene and be like, oh yeah, I came in and I watched part of it when you flipped him over. That was like really cool. And I was like, you were in the room?
Yeah.
I didn't even notice that you had came into the room.
The
you know what I'm saying?
Space is real.
Yeah, like in a really good scene, people could come like on a stage when they're like changing sets. Like people could come in and like change the entire environment around me, and I would not notice until I came out of it, and then I'd be like, wait, wasn't this room yellow when we started? And I think that's the aspect of like, you know, I use the analogy of being similar to, you know, taking substances of, you know, you're except it's the one thing where you can always get that same high or higher,
yeah,
right?
It's like a pure.
Most of the time with addictive substances. Mm-hmm. Yeah. You're chasing that first high, which is always the best because you've never experienced it before. Right. Kink is something that like you can chase that and you can find it again, right?
Mm.
It's a natural high, and you may play with someone else, or you may do the exact same thing you did with the same person in another, like just in a different time. And because you're in a different headspace, or they're in a different headspace, or they brought different energy, it can, you know, it can create a completely different experience.
Puzzle pieces on times.
Yeah, like. So it's like it's endless opportunities for amazing moments. And you know, as far as we know. Factually, we get this one conscious life. So would we not want to spend it in more of it in those moments of being just so secure in who you are, what a space you are, feeling loved, feeling connected with another human being, which despite what any human says, even despite jokes I make, is the purpose in which we find purpose in living, like as a human, like why are we here? What is the purpose? Most of the time it goes back to connection and communication with other people. You know, if you go back in even ancient history, we are a tribal species. You know what I'm saying? We instinctually go to hierarchy. Not say that because they're actually scientifically studying that, and that's not necessarily true. But we are a tribal, we are definitely a tribal people, and that definitely has to do with connection with other humans. So, I think again, just trying to get rid of some of those stereotypes, and so you know, surprisingly enough, 50 Shades of Grey helped. Like
it wasn't bad.
It's not the best resources. It's not giving you the best of like view of what the kink community is, but it did kind of open the sphere in the vanilla world for people to talk about it. Right.
Conversation. Mm-hmm. Same thing with the show that ended up on Netflix, I think.
Bondage.
Yeah. Not the best show. Cause we know that a lot of it's wrong and not consensual and a little problematic, but some people watched it. They talked about it.
They Google searched and hopefully they find people like me and Sushi in the community to give
to them, usher them in, say, hey, yeah, come over here. Mm-hmm. This is a good area. These are good people. These are people mm-hmm. that can give you the knowledge that you need. And then go over there, play some rope, have fun.
Yeah.
I agree.
Wow.
I agree. Give more people a sense of belonging as well.
Oh, yeah.
Yes, there is a deep community, and there is a community with like the arts that are nonverbal, that you can go to a place in which you don't know the language, yet you know the language. It's like yeah. the language of love, that language, like dancing and paint, like you're yeah. an art, you're transferring from like a physical presence to an art, like this art, an abstract presence. Which is really yeah. beautiful when you can do that with other people. And it sounds like you get to do that with not only a shade of difference in yourself, which is what changes if you were doing a drug, but you get to have two or more different spectrums of people interacting with you and creating new experiences. And it seems like you're really getting into that analytical and like, this analytical repeatability phase of that I haven't gotten to hear people speak so eloquently into it. That it seems like the analyzer in you, like the analytical mind, is onboarding all of this like emotional section that may have. You're bridging right now. You're sorting. Which is interesting because it's a different way of approaching that like flow state. Yeah, the personality type. Yeah. Now, when you said personality type, what are you speaking into? Like, what personality did you do a personality matrix? Did you do dozens of them?
She's the low-key expert.
I'm not low-key, let's be that, because I talk about it a lot, but I'm not an expert either.
This is a topic that she's been studying about for several months.
Almost a year now.
Yeah, actually. Several, if not many months. And she's been doing like a real deep dive into the just all the aspects of it, and she's all the time.
Yeah, it's foundationally based on the Myers-Briggs personality types. Looking at it not as from behaviors, but actually explaining the functions, as in the way your brain processes information, brings information in, and then actually makes decisions on that information. Me and Sushi are both INTJs. And so as I got, you know, it's a side hobby that's really fun, but also like I don't do hobbies that I can't actually like use in real life, in the real world, in a productive way. And it's also been like one of the most helpful tools in working with other people. Something INTJs are actually not very good at is social stuff. We don't read cues very well. We normally are learning mimicked behaviors as we are maturing and growing up.
Hence the social analyzing.
Yes.
The value in community, because we have to like force ourselves to integrate. But once we're there, we're like, yes, let's stay here and make it better and make sure everybody has it.
Yeah. And like, it's very like, you know, it's rooted, our personality types are rooted in the aspect of creating good experiences for other people. And I like that the fact that I can break this down and see why I'm more dominant, why I get joy out of creating these scenes for people.
It actually does help see someone's drives and goals and mm-hmm. ambitions, and kind of puts it in a context to where you can figure out like, will we, you know, be in the same direction, or, you know, but like
so, sorry, just to give an example of like a real world aspect in which they are trying to actually use this. One, again, going back to like science, to make something a science, you have to have people studying it and money to do the research to make it a provable science.
And that is, you have to write it down. Science is about writing things down.
And well, and you have to prove that it works. And so there are a few different aspects within the personality typing community that have really created amazing systems for breaking down how each of these personality types function, and then also how they work and compatible with each other. So if you think about like in a corporate business, business meeting, and you have 12 people that are going to be launching a product over the next 9 months, if you can literally strategically put that team together based on what roles they're going to play, based on what motivates them and their programming. If you literally think it, like I describe it as like a Westworld robot, and like the irony is,
she loves Westworld.
The irony is Westworld has literally pulled a lot of really amazing like philosophies and concepts within science about the brain that are actually just 100% true about humans, and just put them into robots, and we're like, woohoo, but that's actually how we operate. And it's similar with personality typing, where it's literally like your programming. You cannot change it. You can grow muscles so you're better at certain functions, but it will always flow in that order. And so by consciously being aware of it, I can see it in my friends, and I can help them communicate. Like this has happened many times where I'm sitting in the middle of my two friends and I'm like, I'm going to jump in now. You guys are saying the same thing.
Oh, yeah,
you're arguing, but you're literally saying the same thing.
Right.
This is what you're saying it in this language, and you're saying in this language, and I'm going to translate for you guys so we can like move on because we're trying to be efficient. Because that happens. And again, I like to, going back to communication, a majority of our conflicts in life is rooted back to miscommunication. If you go through the train of most drama, conflict, anything that happens in your life, even at work with a boss, with another coworker, most of the time it's miscommunication. They thought I said it in this tone, but I was really saying it when I was crying. They thought I did it like this, but they really, and because we didn't communicate about it, I'm making all the assumptions of their feelings, they're making all the assumptions of my feelings, and now we're in conflict.
Or it's the fact that many people just don't have the same shared language. And so you might use certain words about consent and like, well, this is okay, but then the context isn't there, or the words you say, like good and bad, might not be the same thing. And
you are dealing with complex emotions.
Yeah.
Yes.
And they're complicated and they're unique. They're unique to the person.
Yeah.
Exactly.
So we have to talk about it in that way so that we can properly understand each other.
Yeah, exerting empathy is not something that's societally acceptable almost. Is like this having empathy for the other person. It's more like I was right and they're wrong.
Absolutely.
You know, there is a need and a desire to be correct, even though there's nothing to be correct about. You just need to feel right.
Yes.
To fulfill some deep desire and like need inside yourself.
I mean, when I've talked to people who are in conflict, I like to ask them like, what is your goal? What is your goal?
With
this conversation, because what you want to do is a great goal to prove that you're right. Mm-hmm. Right? If you can say all those things and you can make those decisions, and that will prove that you are right. Will it solve the problem? Will it grow? Will you learn anything? Will the other person grow and learn? No, oftentimes not, but you'll feel better because you're right, I guess. Right? And I think sometimes sitting down and being like, yes, you may have to swallow the fact that that other person is never going to say, oh, you're right. But also now you get to keep your friend
or
your boyfriend.
And you don't have to waste energy on that.
Yeah.
Efficiency. We love it.
Don't want to waste energy.
Yeah. I mean, you guys are tackling some difficult topics rather rapidly.
You can bring us back if you need to.
We're coming back right now. I don't think I asked a question. I think that we just had a conversation. where I listened and you guys were so knowledgeable that I was enthralled. And I get to ask a question before we get out of here.
You do. Please ask us at least one question.
One question, please.
Give me a moment. He asked us to explain ourselves.
Oh, yeah. I got one in. This is my number.
Question. We'll try not to make the answer 30 minutes ago.
Well, it's okay, so my final question, my pet question, I enjoy it a lot. In our society, we don't really get to have a transition between becoming into adulthood. We don't have an adulthood transition. And I wanted to know from each of you, what was your first experience shifting from a child or like a person who's not a non-sexual being into a sexual being?
Do you want to go first?
I can go first. I don't know how much this relates to other people, but I feel like this is definitely something that we should talk about as a generation and the generations that are soon to come. So when I first realized that I am a sexual being, I was probably about 12 and a half, almost 13. My mom had bought me an iPod Touch and I started talking to people on the internet and she didn't know. And I kept it pretty hidden until much later. I don't really even think she ever found out. So I guess forever, she'll never know. And so I realized that I was a sexual being because online I was being objectified by men that were pretty much older than me. They were between about 15 to about 30, and I didn't know that anything was wrong with that. And they talked to me about things, about sex, about these other things. I talked to them too. And I didn't even really explore my body or myself until years later, but it still like framed something for me that I'm a sexual being and that like sex happens or can happen to my body, whether I choose it or not. When I started realizing how my sex can affect how people view me, which is, I feel like, part of the question, because it actually is something I still kind of struggle with a little bit, is when my mom, we were like walking down a road and she was like, no, you can't hold hands. And I was like, what? Why can't we hold hands? I'm like 11, 12, 13 or something. And she's like, we can't hold hands because then people will think we're lesbians. And I'm like, what's wrong with that?
Why? So that many things.
Oh, no.
We're going to talk about one of the things wrong with it, but there's multiple levels of things wrong with that comment.
She knows about more about my mother and why we have issues, but like this is important to my sexual story, so I'm just bringing this up for context. But like with those two things going on, I realized that I am a sexual being. I am a human that can have the capacity to have sex. Of course, I didn't have sex until later, luckily, and I didn't become empowered about my sexual self until probably in my 20s. And so I guess it's been a journey for me, but now I'm in a place where I am comfortable with my bisexuality. Luckily, my mom didn't like hurt that. So ladies, if you're up for it. Anyway,
mom, so, look what you got.
but yeah. Check your kids' phones. Make sure they're not talking to strangers.
Or don't. Just educate them.
Yes.
So they know what to do in those situations.
Yes. Don't give internet restrictions. Have conversations. It's much more productive, and I think it would have helped me and people I know very
what?
Well.
You think parents should talk to their kids about sex?
Gasp.
That's what school's for. I'm in my situation, let's see, I was probably 9 or 10. I started maturing as a woman, young, and I was raised in a very white part of the country, and so I was one of the few black kids in most of the spaces I was in. And again, completely other conversation, but please look it up. The adultification of black children.
It's a problem. It's please look it up.
It's
we
a
don't
whole
have time to talk about it.
It's a whole yeah,
it's not this show. We'll have you back.
Good.
yeah. So for a long time there were, outward influences that perceived me in very sexual ways before I was very aware of my own sexuality. But I became aware of that's how I was being perceived probably around 8 or 9. Cause that's when my parents had to start being a little bit more protective, I think. And so I became aware of those things. And then I don't think I was, I wasn't really empowered in my sexuality, I think, until I was blessed that I have a great, you know, virginity story. I was able to, I had my virginity until I was with my high school sweetheart, who I ended up marrying, and it was a planned evening with candles, and it was beautiful, and I wasn't drunk, and like, it's a story that I don't even like sharing, because people are like, are you serious? Really? That was your first time? And I'm like, I know, it's annoying for me to even think about, because it was nice. But he also was much more experienced, so like, I think like 3 days after my 18th birthday, he took me to an adult shop and we bought a toy and a movie. And then when we were back to an intimate space, he was like, you're going to actually have an orgasm tonight. And I was like, wait, what do you mean? Like, I've totally been having those. So his sexual acumen was very helpful in my sexual life. But then again, I also had a second empowerment moment, getting into kink and realizing that I don't owe anyone any of this shit. And that has been its own empowering thing. And I think we had mentioned before, being able to be in spaces and environments where I don't have to worry about fighting my sexual energy, which is exuding everywhere to everyone first. People come to me with respect as a dominant, and that can't be their first intention, because that's not the spaces we create in the kink community. And that, I will say, is probably one of the most freeing aspects of being in kink, selfishly, right? Like, that just has to do with me. It's just that, like, oh my God, I get to be in this space and I'm not a sexual object because of how I present, because of how I identify. And this is the first time in my entire life that I've felt that way. And that's very like empowering and freeing too. And again, one reason why we want to make more spaces where more women can feel that way, because I guarantee you a lot of women are like, wait, what? There's a space where I cannot be objectified and still be a sexual being? There is.
Sign me up.
There is.
Wonderful stories that could have been tragic and that have been taken, and the script has been flipped, as they say, and turning them into empowering moments. And I hope everyone else can have that resolution with things that have.
I do want to add, because you did say that. I don't want people to think that it didn't come with lots of therapy and money and heartache. Like, we consciously went to go
therapy right now.
Yeah, we consciously went to go deal with our traumas so that we can talk about them in a productive way to other people, to try to help other people. But I also like have to add a note that like, don't think that that's necessarily easy or that we're done. Like, we're still working on things.
It's hard and scary thing to do is be authentic. It's difficult. It's the road less traveled. I was talking to somebody today, biblically, I was like, there was, there's the road to hell and the road to heaven, and the road to heaven is the one that's hardly traveled. It's difficult. It's hard. And eventually you get there. And I'm like, well, that's, you think about Einstein. Einstein said, heaven's on earth. It's a mind frame. And I feel like I'm on that fucking road because my life is hard as shit, especially talking about this stuff. So I feel like I'm on the road less traveled, and that does give me like strength to continue walking down that road. And I, anyways,
you are on a road less traveled.
Walking the road.
Yes. Like really, most humans don't want to get like past level one of being a conscious level human, because to get past level one or two, you do have to go directly into all of those traumas and heartaches and things that you dealt with from your childhood. Even if you're 18, if you had people that raised you or didn't raise you, somehow you got fucked up by the time you're 18. There's something you need to process and deal with. And that is the next step. And most people don't do it. And it is because of that fear, because you do have to at least run across those coals. You have to feel that pain. You have to revisit that thing to be able to heal from it. But then once you do, it's better than heaven. It's the promised land, darling. The being like confident in yourself, having agency, telling people, no, I can actually just tell you no and not feel bad and not have any guilt. That is an empowering and just like a way fulfilling and free place to live in your life. But a lot of people don't necessarily want to do the work to get there.
To close this out, basically what we're telling you is to kink and go to therapy.
You kink, go to therapy. Those are wonderful closing words. My name is Alexander Scatino. Yes. This is Shh, Don't Tell My Mom. We're changing lives over here. Like, share, subscribe, visit me at theislandoftaboo.com. All the links to these lovely ladies will be in the comment or in the description section. I will put them in there personally. Thank you guys. Have a wonderful day.
Thank you for having us.
Great. Thank you so much. Mm-hmm.